I came into this magnificent fellowship of ours February the 7th of 1969. Tomorrow marks my 30-year anniversary, and I am most grateful. First of all, if you wouldn't mind shutting that back door, I don't want morphology to hear what's going on up here in the fun place, I'll tell you. Did y'all see that last?
Yeah.
Morphology is meeting on the second floor. I couldn't come upstairs till I found out what morphology was, and I am not going to share it. I really want to thank Lynette and the committee for having me here. It's just a privilege, of course, to share anything, anytime, anywhere, but especially here. This is my home. I feel like I'm away from home. I sleep out in California, but I'm sure from Texas. I want you to know. And I'd like to thank Joe and Kay. They're always so gracious in their hospitality to me. And I'm just delighted to be here. I don't know what else to say other than I am delighted to be here. I'm sure I'd like to see those in the room that have a year or less in our fellowship. Great. Well, y'all the one I'm going to talk to. The rest of these people are here because they're scared not to be. My oldest sponsoree is here today. She's going to have 25 years in a couple of months, a few months. She drove, how many, 5 hours? She drove 5 hours with a carload of newcomers. God love her. to come over here to bring them and to listen to her sponsor. And I bring that, stand up, Susan. Let me see, let people see what a real sicko looks like. And I want to mention that because there is absolutely no reason for Susan to be here. She's heard me for 25 years. There's no reason for her to get off work and drive 5 hours and then have to drive 5 hours back tomorrow and get up and go to work. And it's really tiring. And there's no reason for that, except she has newcomers that need to know what the fellowship's about. And so she would put them in the car and drive and do all that. So the next time you think you're too tired to drive across town to go to a meeting, or it's too inconvenient to spend a Saturday morning somewhere in service, maybe you might pop Susan in your head that she drives 5 hours, you know, with a bunch of newcomers just to do this deal. And that always impresses me. I love to see people give back to this deal. we'll have a break here in a little bit, and since this is so loosey-goosey, as soon as my bladder's full, I'm sure yours will be full, because I... And if you can, just because, just wait till we have a break. I'm not going to keep y'all too long, because it's so disruptive when you get up and walk out to go get a cup of coffee or use the restroom. Everybody turns and looks to see who you are and what you're doing, not because, it's just human nature. And then you may miss something really cute that I've got to say. I think it's extremely important that we know why we do this, even study the steps. I think it's very important for me the last several years to figure out where we came from in the first place. And the 12 steps we got from Alcoholics Anonymous. Our traditions we got from Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, everything that we've gotten has come from Alcoholics Anonymous, our whole structure. Therefore, I was taught when I came in where the steps were to be found to study in the first place. And they were found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and in the, shortly thereafter, the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's what I have studied all these years, and there's some other things that have come along that have been Al-Anon literature that's been great. I guess. This one, this newest one, Path to Recovery, has got some good stuff in it. It's got some great stuff, and I brought it to show y'all. I don't particularly use it because I hadn't studied it really well, to tell you the truth. So my step study really is out of the big book in the A's 12 and 12. Why? Why is it there? Let me. I am so lost today. I hate to even mention this, but I have lost my big book. I have a big book that has the first 164 pages and the 12 and 12 all bound together. And inside that, in the back, you know how you keep all your stuff? All my stuff on how to do a lot of this is in there. I have a little outline that I just popped to, and I'm really good at it, and I've lost it. So I'm just stumbling and bumbling today. I was up at midnight trying to figure out what all this was. So I hope this works. Out of the AA's 12 and 12, let me read this right off. To the forward, it says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a worldwide fellowship of more than 100,000 men and women who are banded together to solve their common problems and to help fellow sufferers in recovery from that age-old baffling malady, alcoholism. Of course, this was written in 1985, and there's many more now. And it says here, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happy and useful and have a useful life. That's what the 12 steps do for you. Then it says, though the essays which follow were written mainly for members, it is thought by many of AA's friends that these pieces might arouse interest and find application outside of AA itself. Many people, non-alcoholics, report that as a result of the practice of AA's 12 steps, they have been able to meet other difficulties in life. They think that the 12 steps can mean more than sobriety for problem drinkers. They see them in a way to a happy and effective living for many, they're alcoholic or not. So they gave us permission and wanted us to use their literature from the get-go. And then this is a quick little brief history. Alcoholics Anonymous began in 1935 in Akron, Ohio, as the outcome of a meeting between a well-known surgeon and a New York broker. Both were severe cases of alcoholism and were destined to become co-founders of the AA Fellowship. The basic principles of AA, as they are known today, were borrowed mainly from the fields of religion and medicine, though some ideas upon which success finally depended were the results of noting the behavior and the needs of the fellowship itself. This is a picture of Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. I photocopied it because I was carrying this big, huge briefcase along with me that had all these books in it to do a little brief history, and it got so heavy, and I had a car wreck, and I got two bad knees and a bad back, and I just barely walked, much less carry this stuff. So finally somebody said, one of these smart aleck newcomers said, well, why don't you just photocopy that stuff? And it was like, oh, duh. So it's also a little tattered and torn. If you do not have this book, I would highly suggest that you get it. It's an AA book. It's a history of AA, and it is incredible. It tells where we came from and why we came from and the birth of Al-Anon itself. And it helps us know why we're here, what other people went through, and what a magnificent, awesome miracle that we walk through. I mean, because you're here this morning is God's grace. It is Saturday morning. Right down the street, I guarantee you, in Dallas, Texas, there's a family, and some woman has just been beat to death by some drunk that come in at 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock this morning. The kids have just gone to sleep because they've been up all night watching and listening, hiding in the closet, hiding under the bed. And that wife does not have any place to go. Her friends have deserted her. People look at her with total disdain. She's about to lose her job if she hadn't already. And it's Saturday morning. It's just another Saturday morning. Now, I just described my own life 30 years ago. Exactly. And here we sit today, those of us in this magnificent, is this some kind of hotel or what? These chandeliers cost more than my life. Look at that thing. And because of alcoholism and because of all of that, we're sitting here this morning. And if we forget where we came from and why we got here, as some of us can, and I did, you know, after you're around here for a while, you know, your shoulders kind of go back and you know it all, and you start prancing in here, you know, and, well, I've got this deal down. And we forget where we came from and why we're here on Saturday morning. So I think it's always really important for me to go back and see. We're just on a thin string of a miracle here. I mean, my sponsor's husband used to say, this thing just barely works. It just barely works. Well, the phone lines are busy this morning. Sounds like Beverly Hills here. So, in this book, this is during the first 3 days of July 1955. Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is what this is about, held a convention in St. Louis. And it was the 20th anniversary of the founding of AA. So they had their very first international convention. And this book is literally the convention from tapes typed out. So it is a great little history thing. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the final day, about 5,000 AA members and their families and friends were seated in the Kiel Auditorium at St. Louis. Now, this was in 1955. 1990, in San Diego, there was 55,000 at the International Convention. 55,000. A lot of you were there. We had the best time. It was the most magnificent thing. In a couple of years, it's going to be in, where is it? St. Paul, Minneapolis. Don't miss it. Now, out of this book came this. I'm going to read here for a second. Reading is very difficult for me to listen to, so I know when you're out there it's very difficult to listen to. But try your best, because I just picked out some really good stuff. Right up front, among the biggest eye-openers of this convention were the Al-Anon family group meetings, which bore the titles Meet the Staff. Now listen to this one. The Children of Alcoholics, Adjustment Between Husbands and Wives, and the 12 Steps. Now, this was their topics. A few years ago, we had this wave come in, this new wave, Adult Children of Alcoholics. I was living in Oklahoma at the time, and this gal wanted to start one of these meetings in our little clubhouse. And I stood in the door frame. Said, you will not bring that thing in this. I mean, I was so high and mighty about keeping Al-Anon pure and just on and on and on, and just was raising Cain. And then I saw this in that book like a few years later, and I thought, oh man, I hope she never sees this. The Children of Alcoholics was one of the first workshops in 1955, for pity's sakes. A lot of this, you know, I griped about psychiatry. I just griped and groaned and moaned about all that psychobabble and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and skipped over it. I guess I better go back. In this book, we were studying it, and it was a psychiatrist who said to AA, you need to change the word you and must in your literature. The psychiatrist said, I think it would help if you put we instead. So a psychiatrist put, we admitted we were powerless. And it's like, you know, you just learn this stuff and you hope nobody goes back and sees that. Just keep it your little secret and then play like you came up with it. In St. Louis, many a skeptical AA had his first look at this movement within a movement. Al-Anon was a movement within the whole movement of Alcoholics Anonymous. That just warms my heart. We were with them. I mean, we got a special place in the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope we never forget that. I'm out in California, and sometimes they want to shoot Al-Anons in California. They are so separate out there that it's scary. And that way in many parts of the country. It is not that way back here and in many other areas. But there's little pockets of places where Al-Anons and AA are the enemies. And I think it's so important that we realize, Al-Anons, those of you who are Al-Anon in here, that God put us together. This ain't our idea. Alcoholics and Alcoholics Anonymous are not the enemy. We're weird, or we wouldn't be here this morning. I mean, we're weird people. You just have to concede that in your innermost self. Newcomers, y'all are weird. Normal people don't hang around with drunks. They just don't. If you're out in a if you were in this hotel downstairs in the restaurant, and a drunk starts, you know, throwing food, why, you would get up and leave. A normal person. But what we do is make excuses for them, or go pick the food up and wipe the chin of the person it hit. You know, we just... I use this illustration all the time. I don't mean any disrespect. It's the truth. A normal person, because I heard a woman say this once, and she was out, and I thought, isn't that something? She was talking about this man, and they were going to live together to see if they could get married, and... He got drunk in the middle of the night. He peed on her carpet, and she shoved him out of there like crazy. And I thought, well, is that all? I was on pee patrol for years. He used to pee in my closet, my shoes. That was his favorite place. It never occurred to me to raise Cain about that. What I did was I started sleeping a little lighter. So that when he stirred, I'd wake up, see where he was going, and guide him to where the necessary place. Now, that makes total sense to me. Just watch him. I mean, you don't sleep, but you watch him. Now, that's weird. It's very weird. So we're weird people. And alcoholics know that. And they love us anyway. I have a friend in L.A. that says this all the time. He says, alcoholics, you better be nice to the Al-Anons. They're the only ones who like us. So there was a movement within a movement. And they learned with astonishment that the family groups had jumped from 70 groups to 700 in only 3 years. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. They were astonished. Where I lost my place. And right now, a brand new one was popping up in the world about every day. Lois and speakers from many areas told us that the family groups had a clearinghouse, much like AAs. Many AAs had wondered what the family groups were all about. Were they gossip clubs? Were they commiseration societies? Were they coffee and cake auxiliaries? Did they divert AA from its single purposes of sobriety? The family group's meetings proved and provided the answers. These new groups were not also ran to AA, but they were not gossip factories. The families of alcoholics, the wives, the husbands, the mothers, the fathers, and children were pointing AA's principles right straight at themselves and nobody else. So this was a great eye-opener for these people in 1955 of who and what we were all about, and they embraced us. Lois talked at the Sunday afternoon closing meeting, and this is what Lois said. Good afternoon, everybody. I want to express here before you all my gratitude for this great occasion and my thanks for being allowed to share in it. It is in this sharing that makes AA the power for good that it is. Through these 20 years and climax today by this thrilling convention, you have not only been an inspiration to me and to many others like me, but you have given us proof of the power of good over evil. You have given us a demonstration that lives, no matter how low or sordid they may become, they can be changed. Men and women, through God's grace, can be remotivated to become constructive, useful forces. I believe all these miracles have come about because the principles of AA coincide with the highest precepts that we know, with the fundamental laws of the universe. And these principles teach us how to step aside so that God can act through us. I am particularly grateful to AA for showing me personally and all the other wives and the husbands of AAs to the way to a better and more useful life. From the very beginning, AA's example has made many of us want to live by the 12 steps and to live by the 12 traditions ourselves and to help others like us who are still frustrated and alone. In the last 10 years, the members of partners of alcoholics who share the same feeling of need have increased so greatly that it has become possible to band together in groups in order to better solve our problem of fear and insecurity and to pass our experience on to others who seek our help. The Al-Anon family groups are a spontaneous response to a vital need. In the family groups, we follow the lead of you in AA. We admit that we too are powerless over alcohol. We try to take our hands off of your problems. We try to stop bossing, nagging, acknowledging the integrity of your lives as well as our own. We try to take our own inventories, to admit to God and to another human being the exact nature of our own wrongs. We make amends to those that we have harmed. We seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. And we try to carry this message to others. In the family groups, we are trying to do the best of our ability to live by the very same principles that have done so much for you. This effort on our part seems to have favorable results for you, the alcoholics, as well as for us. As a consequence, many upset homes have become serene, united, and joyous places. We thank you, AA, for this tremendous opportunity to spread your message, which we have adopted as our own. Now that's from our Al-Anon co-founder. Bill, her husband, was so supportive of us. He loved us very, very much. In this book, Al-Anon Faces Alcoholism, the first printing, unfortunately, and I won't get into that, it has been discontinued. Yeah, well, I'm going to get into that. Some of the best books that we have had cross our path have been discontinued in order to put new books and new books and new books. I got so tickled the other day. I was at a convention, and over here in this big, huge hall was the AA literature on one of those little long tables. There was their literature, and it's all set up. Al-Anon's over here, and there was four tables. They had to set up four tables for our literature. We are a publishing company to make money. And that's all I'm going to say. In this discontinued book, there's a chapter on our history that is invaluable. Somebody around here, who in this room, who old-timer has this book in this room? Al-Anon Faces Alcoholism, the first edition. Okay, I would like for y'all to get the chapter on the history and make copies of it and give it to your new chickadees so they can have the whole chapter. Would y'all do that? Khaki, I know you'll do it. Won't you? Won't you, Khaki? Give it to your group. Have it available to your groups. I don't know about copyright and all that stuff, but just slide it to them and don't tell anybody you're doing it. It's discontinued, so maybe that won't matter, right? Oh, good. Okay. Out of this book, and I just bring this along for fun, all the alcoholics really like for me to read this one. This is out of page 26 of this book, and it says in this book, it has been said that some of the meanest women in the world are married to alcoholics. It's in our literature. And this is from the chapter that says, The Volunteers of Al-Anon from the Early Days Onward. And it is a magnificent little chapter. And it's talking about how Al-Anon and how Lois and Ann, not Ann Smith, but another Ann in New York City, put together a little office and started our World Service office. And I shall read. More than two decades have passed since the day, and of course this is written a long time ago, the day in early January of 1952 when the first two volunteers, Lois and Ann, transplanted family group work from an upper room in Lois's home to the AA club on the 24th Street. The transplant came just about the time to save them from exhaustion. They had been laboring alone since May of 1951 with a spat of correspondence larger than four hands could handle. They were answering all these letters. Bill would get all these letters from the wives who were torn up, who were hurting, who were needing a place. Now, two things happened almost simultaneously in 1952. AA General Service Headquarters had compiled a list of 87 names. Inquiries from various wives, quotation, group, the wives groups, from non-alcoholic individuals seeking help from AA and for understanding the alcoholics. They're writing AA's office saying, help us, we don't understand what's going on. They see their sober alcoholics since 1935 getting sober and doing well, and here's the wives and the families. 1935, and this is 1952. That's a long time of struggling for the families of alcoholics. Second thing that happened, about that time, Lois's husband Bill, the co-founder of AA, returned from a swing around the country during which he had also attended the wives' groups. He'd been out going from one place to the other. In fact, he had come to Lubbock, Texas, where I came in. I still remember them talking about it. He came and he visited the Central Club where I came in. KK had him in his house and visited with him, and Bill talked about what was going on around the country, and that was, nobody knows who I'm talking about but Susan. I'm having a private conversation with Susan here. KK went around, just, that was his, he just talked about it all the time, and I sat at his feet. You know how when you're a newcomer and you sit at the feet of the old timers just listening? I'd listen to KK talk about Bill's visit. Every time there was a birthday party after meeting over at somebody's house, I'd tug on his britches leg. Would you tell us about Bill's visit? I was just mesmerized by it. So when he came from this trip back, he says, returning from a swing around the country during which he attended wives groups, a few of these were straight auxiliaries of AA, which met chiefly to serve coffee and cake at meetings, to put up curtains in AA clubhouses, or to talk about their husbands. Others, however, met or less informally for the sole purpose of applying AA principles to themselves and for the mutual assistance in their common problem of living with an alcoholic. Bill had been most impressed with these groups and the goals that were already attained, but he felt strongly that there must be a central place, some clearinghouse, where help could be obtained to foster their groups or groups that might spring up and die. Bill was greatly excited about this new offspring of AA. Now listen to what Bill said, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. He has never failed to say Al-Anon is just about the greatest thing that has happened since AA began. He has said many times, publicly and privately, that since there are at least from 1 to 5 persons affected by each alcoholic, he can imagine the day when Al-Anon would be larger than AA itself. Nowadays, side note here, they say 10 people are affected by every alcoholic. Bill was indeed far-sighted in his prophecy. It is interesting to look back now and realize that at the end of AA's first 4 years, there were fewer than a half a dozen AA groups and perhaps 100 members. Now, I want you to listen to this, how they phrased this. Bill Wilson was an entrepreneur. He was a wheeler and a dealer, and he set deals, and he was fast, and he was furious, and he was tall, and he was slim, and he just went. He could figure out things, and he could plan, and he could make it look good. And this is what he says. Fewer than a half a dozen. That means fewer than a half a dozen. 5, 4, 3. Fewer than a half a dozen. You and I would say, well, there was 4. Alcoholic says, well, fewer than a half a dozen. Sounds better. Now, doesn't it? Doesn't that sound better? I just love the way he did. And perhaps 100 members. See the perhaps? Now listen to this. Al-Anon's first 4 years showed a growth of 47 groups derived from those original 87 names. Lois wrote to those 87 people, she and Ann, and gave them some instructions. Why don't you work the 12 steps? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Form a group. This is how you do it. And out of that 87 names, in just 4 years, 600 groups. Bill's and AA was less than a half a dozen the first 4 years. It is impossible to tell how many members each group held. Now, we also have to remember that the first 4 years of AA was from 35 to 39. And the first 4 years that they put all this together was in the 50s. And everybody knows how fast the 50s were. So we have been completely and totally blessed with the fact that all this has come about and set in motion for you and I. They sent out a little informal inventory, if you will, to all the groups they had listed about the name for Al-Anon. They got all kinds of different names back in the mail, and they finally got down to a few and sent this few out, and they were voted on, and they picked Al-Anon. So many people want to know what that means and where it came from. Al is the first 2 letters of alcoholics. Anon is the first 4 letters of anonymous. And there's a slash in between. My sponsor gets absolutely livid if there's not a slash in between those. I mean, she goes around with a pen and puts slashes everywhere. The name came from either, I've heard conflicting, but it came from either, because both claim it, you know how Texans are, either San Antonio or Austin, Texas. Do you hear me? Al-Anon came from Texas, the name of our fellowship. Just a little bit of trivia there that I spread everywhere I go. Okay. Out of Alcoholics Comes of Age is a little story about Bill and how he wrote the steps, how they came about. There's a man named Big John Carlton, and he sobered up in Texas. He was a senator from Washington, D.C. He came to Texas on the back of a chicken truck. He sat back there with all the boxes, and he landed somewhere in Texas. Brownwood? He wound up in Brownwood, Texas, this great, big, huge, magnificent man. He got sober there. And Ebbie Thacker, who was Bill Wilson's sponsor, used to be in this part of the country a lot. Ebbie Thacker carried the message of AA to Bill Wilson. And Ebbie had some friends down in Sonora, and so he stayed with those friends, and they came to Brownwood to a little conference back there a lot, and before that even started, to a bunch of friends. And Ebbie was there with a guy named Uncle Dick. And Uncle Dick was John Carlton's sponsor. And they were going to take a trip back to New York to see Bill Wilson. And they invited the dummy newcomer, John, Big John Carlton, to go with them. So he did. And four of them went, and they went out to Stepping Stones, where Bill had lived. And he took them out to the office where he had written the steps. And somebody was sitting on the floor and pulled on his britches leg and said, "Bill, tell us how you did the steps." And John told us this story. He told it in my living room one night. I was just fascinated with it, so he came back another time, and I said, "I want you to tell that again. I'm going to record it, if you don't mind, and type it out." So he told that story again. It's just a magnificent little story. And I was on tape recorder, and Susan typed it out, and I think I have it, or Susan does, and my life is in storage. My husband died a couple of years ago, and I just, Susan, a whole bunch of them come and packed everything, and everything's in storage. My life is in storage. So I don't have nothing, hardly. But it's a fascinating story, and if anybody really wants it, you can let me know, and I'll get you a copy of it. But this is Bill's rendition of what out of the AA Comes of Age. I was in this anything but spiritual mood on the night when the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous were written. I was sore and tired clear through. I lay in the bed with a pencil in hand and a tablet of scratch paper on my knee. I could not get my mind on the job, much less put my heart in it. But here was one of those things that had to be done. Slowly, my mind came into some kind of focus. Since Abby's visit to me in the fall of 1934, we had gradually evolved to what was called a word-of-mouth program. Most of the basic ideas had come from the Oxford group, William James, and Dr. Silkworth. Though the subject to considerable variation, it all boiled down to some pretty consistent procedures, which comprised six steps. These were approximately as follows. Number one, we admitted that we were licked and that we were powerless over alcohol. Two, we made a moral inventory of our defects or sins. Three, we confessed or shared our shortcomings with another person in confidence. Four, we made restitution to all those we had harmed by our drinking. Five, we tried to help other alcoholics with no thought of reward in money or prestige. Six, we prayed to whatever God we thought there was for the power to practice these steps. Since the substance of what, by the fall of 1938, we were telling newcomers, this was the substance of what we were telling newcomers. Several of the Oxford groups had other ideas and attitudes and had been definitely rejecting everything that we had done. In important matters, there was still some considerable disagreement between the Eastern and Midwestern views. Now, Dr. Bob lived in Akron, Ohio, and Bill Wilson lived in New York. So between the two of them, they were constantly in contact with each other, trying to hammer out AA as we know it today. Our people out there were still active in Oxford group. This is Dr. Bob. While we in New York had withdrawn a year before from the Oxford group. For you new people, Oxford group was a movement, a religious movement, that was helping a lot of people. And that's where Abby Thacker had gone to and got, quote, religion, and came back and told Bill Wilson about it. And they started going to the Oxford group. And they were having meetings, and it was for everybody. And they soon learned that it didn't work for alcoholics, that one alcoholic had to talk to another alcoholic, and if you got anything in between there, it kind of messed it up. In Akron, the vicinity, they still talked about the Oxford groups, their absolutes, and this is what they live by instead of our 12 steps. Absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. Now you can see why Alcoholics and Al-Anons failed that trip. You couldn't pay anybody to be all these for a week. You couldn't do it for a week. This dose was found to be too rich for the New Yorkers. Them Yankees, I knew it. We had abandoned the expressions, but all of us, East and West, were placing increasing emphasis on Dr. Silkworth's expression describing the alcoholic's dilemma, the obsession to drink plus the allergy to alcohol. By now we knew from experience that this new prospect had to be accepted as step one or we'd get no place. Finally, I started to write. I set out a draft more than these 6 steps. How many more I did not know. I relaxed and I asked for guidance. With a speed that was astonishing, considering my jangling emotions, I completed the first draft. It took perhaps half an hour. The words just kept right on coming. When I reached a stopping point, I numbered the new steps. They added up to 12. Somehow this number seemed significant. Without any special rhyme or reason, I connected them with the 12 apostles. Feeling greatly relieved now, I commenced to reread and reread the draft. And that's our 12 steps. So that's a little bit of our history of how they came about, and then how Al-Anon's adopted them, and why they work for us. And as we read, if you work these 12 steps exactly as they are written, the way they were laid out, your life will become astonishing to you. You cannot miss. There is absolutely no mistake in your life changing and you becoming happy, joyous, and free. You cannot screw it up. If you work the steps exactly the way it is instructed in these books, you can't miss. You can't mess it up. Now that's a great, magnificent promise. Absolutely. In front of this book, for some reason or another, I got this. I loved it. It says, if I ever get to heaven, it will be running away from hell. Isn't that great? I don't know where I picked that. I got a lot of this stuff written down. I don't know where I get it. It's 10 o'clock. Let's take a 15-minute break, and then we'll start on the first 3 steps. Give me this for your information. Step number one. Here we go. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives become unmanageable. I'm going to give you a lot of side notes because I have a lot of side notes written. Like I said, I don't know where they came from. And I'm just sick that I don't have my literature. I guess that's the way it's supposed to be, so I had to actually look at some stuff this last night. This is how we get into our sickness. Side note. Pain. I had a girl that had a 15-year birthday party, and her little babies gave her a party, and everybody was going around the room giving her a word gift, and they were giving her joy and happiness and freedom. You know, they were just being little Al-Anonis. And it came to me, and I said, "I wish you pain." Boy, they went. I mean, they all just almost fainted. And I said, I mean that. If you don't have pain, you will have absolutely no more growth in your program whatsoever. How many of you will get up and take an inventory when there's nothing wrong? How many of you call your sponsor and tell them when there's something really, really right?